I'm not sure when Mike Agronoff's music first graced my ears. If I had to think about it, I have to remember what radio studio I was in. And as I do that, I think it was the mid to late 1980s. So it's been a long time. I'm very happy to have him here. You'll get to know him throughout the hour. Here is Mike Agronoff.
Trains roll in, trains roll out. That's what the life in a railroad yard is all about. We'll load them up and ship them out to each Midwestern town. And they say that I won't have a job if the price of corn goes down. But the first red streaks were in the east when I punched in. And the moon will be above the maple tree before I get home again. And the goons have said they're gonna bust my head if they catch me with a union card. Such is the life of a section hand in the New York Central Yard. There's a woman, old and gray, sits down by the loading platform every day, waiting for the Portsmouth train to bring her boy from war. But for 14 years, the Portsmouth train don't stop here anymore. And I guess her ghost will haunt her post when she is gone. And the arms get heavy, the back gets sore as the afternoon wears on. And the work ain't always easy, but it's seldom far from hard. Such is the life of a section hand in the New York Central Yard. Dutch McGann, I knew him well. Switch engine, give a jerk. Old Dutch, he slipped and fell. And all he'd left to show for a life that's worked away was a sickly wife, four hungry kids, and a mortgage they can't pay. But they give us 3 hours of free time and a box of pine. So we dug his grave and laid him in down by the outbound line. And oft times I've sat and I've tipped my hat to my one-time good old pard. Such is the life of a section hand in the New York Central Yard. Gonna move out west, stake my claim, dig myself a homestead and forget my name. And steal me an engine just to see how fast you'll go. Watch them drivers tear up track and hear that whistle blow. But the first red streaks were in the east when I punched in. And the moon will be above the maple tree before I get home again. And the roof needs fixing, the kids need shoes, Molly needs a bucket of lard. Such is the life of a section hand in the New York Central Yard.
Mike Agronoff at the Saturday Light Brigade. Tell me about that song.
That song was written by Dave Gordon, who is my all-time favorite source of wonderful, incredibly good, well-written songs that nobody has heard.
I haven't heard that song.
No. Dave, I saw him touring in the early 80s. I saw him at the Philadelphia Folk Festival. We once had him at my home concert series, the Minstrel Concert Series. And he was very interesting fellow. He was afflicted with some nerve disorder that left him blind from the age of like 11 or something like that. And it was a degenerative thing. And he actually died not too long after the first time I saw him. But he had this grin in his voice. And his writing is impeccable. Every rhyme rhymes perfectly. Every word scans perfectly. It's great use of the language to fit the music, and he left a legacy of five LPs of brilliant songs that nobody knows. He just never toured long enough to be able to get the recognition that he deserved.
That's a great song. I'm going to have to look to learn more about him.
I don't even know. I think you can get some back copies of his LPs from his widow, Kay Landis. But I don't think he's anywhere on YouTube or anything like that. So it's like my treasure trove. I'm a singer-song finder rather than a singer-songwriter. and I try and specialize in finding these hidden gems, and that is definitely a gem.
We have a picture of Mike going up on our Facebook page, which will link directly to his website as well, mikeagronoff.com. Mm-hmm. You probably have the Mike Agronoff franchise, right?
Yeah.
You didn't have to fight for that or anything. Right. You feel bad for the Richard Kelly folk singer.
Although I have actually found at least three other Mike Agronoffs, two of whom are involved in folk music, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you get started?
I was always a kind of a guy who acted out in class and stuff like that, and was generally a pain in the neck until I find a socially acceptable format to do it. It's a way of saying, hey, look at me.
Did you grow up in New Jersey?
I grew up in New York City, and I moved to New Jersey after I graduated college.
Wow. So what neighborhood in New York City?
Way upper Manhattan. Inwood, I used to look up out of my bedroom window at the Tower of the Cloisters.
Did you I'm going to guess, based on how many years I know you've been playing, you probably got the sample Greenwich Village at its peak.
I was in the right place at the right time, and I just hadn't developed the interest. I mean, there was Greenwich Village, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, the whole shooting match of where it began, a half-hour subway ride for me, and I just never was interested in it until some 10 years later.
Isn't that something?
So I missed out on that.
So in college—
I found out about Woodstock for the first time when I picked up a hitchhiker on the way home from it.
Where did you go to school? You mentioned.
I went to school in New York. I lived at home, the Polytechnic Institute of Brooklyn. I was an engineer in my day job, and I loved my day job. And I got laid off in 2011, and now I'm a full-time, part-time musician.
Well, it's terrific. And Mike is here. He's really associated with the Philadelphia Folk Festival, in fact, so much so that I'm thinking, oh, he's in from Philadelphia. Well, no, he lives in New Jersey.
What had happened was I had been booked for probably 15 years in a row as being a song leader at around the campfire. So a lot of people saw me in that context and therefore associated with me in Philadelphia.
Well, it's good to have you here. Let's have you do another song. We'll chat a little more.
Let's see.
Also brought a concertina here with him.
All right.
Today.
I'll do something on the concertina.
Oh, you don't have to. I didn't mean to. I was just giving you a chance to think.
I came here with no set list, which is unusual for me.
That's a good thing.
Not for me.
Let me be sure Chad has you mic'd appropriately. Actually.
Okay, good.
Yeah, are you okay? I can take some of that too. Good.
I once saw a whale with a golden tooth. And he riz right out of the sea and opened his mouth in the morning sun and showed that tooth to me. Oh, and once I was fishing the deep ground with nigh 6 pound of lead, caught me a cod as big as a man. And it had a man's head. Ain't no end to what I'd tell once it was well begun. Like seeing the devil rise out of the sea instead of the morning sun, and sea snakes lash in the moonlit waves with their terrible lullapins, and little mermaids with diamond eyes and solid silver fins. For some have eyes to see strange sights. Such a one I be, but then I ain't known as a truthful man, and nobody harks to me. There's a fisherman sitting alone on the land. His hands are his craft, his boat is his art. A fisherman sitting alone on the land, a rock, a hard rock in his heart. And There's a Selkie maid swimming alone in the bay. Her eyes are the seals, her heart is the sea. A Selkie maid swimming alone in the bay, and a pure white seal maiden is she. She comes on the shore and she sheds her seal skin. She dances on sand, dances under the moon. Her hair falls in waves down upon her white skin. And only the seals hear the tune. Then standing, the fisherman takes her seal skin, staking his claim to a wife from the sea. She raises his hand, holding up the white skin, saying, "Now you must come home with me." Oh, weeping she goes, and still weeping she stays. Her hands are her craft, her babes are her art. A year more she stays, a rock, a cold rock in her heart. Ah, but what is this hid in the fisherman's bag? It smells like the ocean. It feels like the sea. It's a bunny white seal skin closed up in the bag. Oh, and never a tear more cries she. Goodbye to the house and goodbye to the shore. Goodbye to the babes that I never could claim. Ah, but never a thought for the man left on shore. For Selkie's my nature and name. She puts on the skin and dives back in the sea. The fisherman's cry falls on water deaf ears. She swims in her seal skin away out to sea, and the fisherman drowns in his tears.
We let every last note resonate. We like all those notes. That's Mike Agernoff. Tell me about that tune.
The opening poem was written by a Maine poet named Ruth Moore. Little slim volume of mostly story poems called "Cold as a Dog in the Wind Nor East," and. And the song actually started out as a poem as well, written by Jane Yolen, who is a science fiction and children's writer. And it was set to music by Louis Collins, who sings it unaccompanied. And I thought that the concertina would offer a suitably spooky accompaniment for it.
Yeah, that goes really well together. You've really – Songfinder really applies to you. You've spent a lot of time, it seems like, just trying to unearth and discover.
Well, I actually don't have to look too far because I also book a concert series, a folk concert series called The Minstrel in Morristown, New Jersey. And so I have every week there an opening act and a feature act paraded before me, and every now and then I said, I got to get that song.
Yeah.
So I have a good source.
Yeah, you just keep track of them as you go. Speaking of collecting songs, you should know if you're enjoying what you're hearing that Mike's got a lot of albums out. They're all in print and available. If you go to mikeagernoff.com,
yeah,
they're
order them right from the website or from Amazon or iTunes. But for me, I get more money. So
yeah. They're all
Agranoff, by the way, is spelled A-G-R-A-N-O-F-F.
Yes. Off as in, but is in the opposite of on.
Yeah, and Ag ran off.
Yeah. We just put a picture of Mike along with a link to the website up on our Facebook page if you want to get to it. Mike was in for a house concert last night, and we really want to thank Maren Cook for having Mike here.
Too.
He would not be here otherwise. And it was especially important because Mike was scheduled to be in Pittsburgh a few months ago.
December.
And, it's nice that...
And that it turned out that the host of the house concert had a death in the family.
Yeah.
Had other more important things to deal with.
And Mike, he and I were talking around that time. In fact, we were on the air together. Mike's known for some songs that are very much novelty in nature, but he also has found a lot of serious songs. So what's nice about his albums is they're a real blend of songs of different styles. You've worked hard to really balance those albums.
There's serious, there's funny, there's instrumental excellence, there's spoken word stuff, and a couple of them, there's some Scott Joplin piano rags.
Yeah, there's just a real mix. And in addition to concertina and guitar that you've heard Mike play today, I know you play banjo.
Yeah, and, not very much, and not since a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. But, yeah. What would you like to do next? It's all up to you, and I can patter. You're listening to the Saturday Light Brigade. If you're just tuning in, thanks for doing it. This is a place where you'll hear lots of different types of music in our 11 o'clock hour. How tall are you, Mike? You're a tall guy.
Well, I'm 6 feet, 1/2 inch.
I thought so.
But I used to be 6'3".
That happens as
I'm getting old.
Get a little older. Mike stands up and he almost has this Pete Seeger stance as he plays.
Yeah, yeah. Also the hair and the beard and stuff like that.
I was thinking more of your height.
It's been known. My mother had a crush on Pete Seeger.
Whose mom didn't?
Well, here's a little Irish song preceded by a little Irish joke. So Sean is into his third Guinness, and the door of the pub flies open. It's a little green fellow about 3.5 feet high, bursts in, does a little step dance, does two handsprings up onto the bar, does three cartwheels along the bar, lands right in front of Sean, sticks his head in Sean's beer, goes and runs away. And Sean is not pleased with this turn of events, so he levers himself off the bar stool, chases a little fella down the corner, grabs him by the scruff of the neck, says, "Look, you can't be doing this. You can't be just bursting in here, sticking your head in somebody's beer and going, oh, yes, I can, yes, I can, yes, I can, because I'm a leprechaun, and we could do whatever it is we like." Leprechaun is it now, huh? Well, that's this maybe. But whenever if you do that again, I'm going to take you by a little green belt, pull down your little green trousers, grab you by a little green weenie, swing you around my head three times, and pitch you right out that door over there I am. Oh, no, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. Because leprechauns don't have weenies. Oh? Leprechauns don't have weenies? Oh, how on earth then do you pee? Oh, simple. We go... This is a song with a chorus that's impossible to sing. One day a beautiful princess was walking through the bog, when whom should she meet on a slab of peat but Fred the Talking Frog. Well, the top of the morning to you, miss, hello, hello, cries he. I'd be glad, you know, if you'd stop a mo and listen close to me, because I've been bewitched and I'm needing a royal miss such as your lovely self to give this ugly mug a kiss. Such a metamorphosis will then ensue, I'll tell you true, and I'll turn back to a handsome prince and straightway marry you. To me rightful, rightful Johnny go derum, higglety pigglety down and around, to me hi-lo, harem and scarum, riding a white horse to Cranberry Town, to be toady, toady, Truman Capote, driving to Sligo with Molly O'Shea for to dance by the sea with a right cup of tea on a bleary Sunday morning. Everybody. Yeah, 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 says the princess, right, and that's all fine. But if it's a kiss you're after, I fear you'll have to stand in line. There's frogs outside me father's castle, frogs all in the royal hall. Frogs is climbing up the chimney, frogs is bouncing off the wall. Frogs is floating in the boat and up the stairs and on the shelf. If I kissed every one of you's chases, I'd have no time left to meself. So laddie, let's make it swift, for lately grows the hour. I'm due home for me evening shift, a pining away all in the tower. To me rightful, rightful Johnny go dare, I'm higgledy piggledy down and around. To me high low, harem and scarem, riding a white horse to Cranberry Town. To me toady toady, Truman Capote, Faith and Bangora, it's Maureen O'Hara. Driving to Sligo with Molly O'Shafer to dance by the sea with a right cup of tea on a bleary Sunday morning. Well, she's just about to kiss him when Mrs. Frog comes hopping by saying, Fred, you're late for dinner.
Coming, dear,
was his reply. You mean he's not bewitched, the princess says. Just odd, says Mrs. Frog. And into kissing princesses he meets upon the bog. And though I love me Fred, I fear he chafes at family ties. I'd invite you in for dinner, me dear, but we only have two flies. Thank God you didn't kiss him. Today's your lucky day. When I kiss Fred, I was a princess too, that's how I got this way. To me rightful, rightful Johnny go dare, from higgledy piggledy down and around. To me high low, harem and scarem, riding a white horse to Cranberry Town. To be toady toady, Truman Capote, Faith and Bagora, it's Maureen O'Hara. Hark to the herald, it's Barry Fitzgerald. I'll drive into Sligo with Molly O'Shafer to dance by the sea with a right cup of tea on a bleary Sunday morning. To me toady toady, Truman Capote, Faith and Bagora, it's Maureen O'Hara. Hark to the herald, it's Barry Fitzgerald. Gerald all in a Volkswagen with Victor McLaughlin driving to Sligo with Molly O'Shafer to dance by the sea with a right cup of tea on a bleary Sunday morning. For the dance by the sea on an LSD Timothy Leary Sunday morning.
That's Mike Agronoff. Is that, I'm looking at your CDs to see, have you recorded that?
Yeah, that's on the most recent one.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on the most recent one, Straight Lines.
Okay, I thought it was. Mike's CDs, there's just the titles kind of give you a sense of what you're dealing with here. Straight Lines is
well, actually,
one,
that or, one that one doesn't give it by itself, but I'll do that one later on, and I'll tell you about it.
But Straight Lines, but then there's Ain't Never Been Plugged.
No, Ain't Never Been Plugged.
Ain't Never Been Plugged. That's right. The bin is
underscored.
Underscored. Then there's Or Would You Rather Get a Job, showing Mike in a chaise lounge and barefooted, and then the one I remember that helped me, I think, initially. No, I had one before
Modern
this,
Folk Musician.
The Modern Folk Musician, but you had a cassette or an LP before that, I think.
I actually did. I released a cassette in 1987 or something like that called Rockin' the Boat.
And I think we had a copy of that, if my memory serves. I probably still do somewhere.
And I think I've, with one exception, I've re-recorded all the songs on that cassette on the subsequent four albums in one place or another.
Yeah, MikeAgronoff.com is where you can get information, and it's really easy. One thing Mike's done that's great is, you know, you can sample the songs. They're all listed. You know exactly what you're going to get. It's like good product ingredients, you know.
Yeah.
It's all there. Which, matters from my perspective. It's nice to know what's there as you listen. If you're just joining us, Mike is in. He played last night in a house concert. I hope you had a good turnout for that. We heard some great comments from people this morning saying they were there. And you're heading back.
I'm heading back after I leave here, back to New Jersey.
Well, you'll be on the road a lot this summer.
Not really. I don't have a lot of distant gigs over the summer. I'll be at the Philadelphia Folk Festival, although not performing. I'm always at the New England Folk Festival in Mansfield, Massachusetts, which is the third weekend in April. But I really don't get much of a chance to get out this way.
And the concert series you mentioned, the Minstrel, it's weekly?
We've been running a concert a week since July 25th, 1975.
Wow.
It'll be coming up on 42 years this year. And I know that date because I attended the opening night on my 30th birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
Paid my dollar.
Who did you see? Do you remember?
I think it was local musicians. I think Laurie Brownscombe, and you know, the names that wouldn't mean people to much to people anywhere. I know most of them aren't playing. Laurie actually is. She's out in the West Coast. She's become quite a well established harper.
And what's the venue for that series?
We use the facilities of the Morristown Unitarian Fellowship, and folkproject.org. is the website. It's the Folk Project is the organization under whose auspices the concert series is held. Also holds a contra dance series and music parties at people's houses and weekend getaways. And it's essentially a musicians organization that puts on events not only for musicians and singers, but also for the general public as well.
That's great. You mentioned your mom had a crush on Pete Seeger before. Did your parents play music?
My mother sang popular music of her day and Broadway songs. She had played piano as a child, but never kept up, and essentially never did it in any public. My father had a complete tin ear. It was pretty painful.
Mine too, actually. My dad. I don't think had a musical bone in his body, really. My mom very much so played music and raised me on Fats Waller and the Weavers, and she probably had a crush on Pete Seeger, or maybe maybe Lee Hayes. I don't know. We'd love to hear you. We've got about 15 to 20 minutes of radio time.
Okay.
There's so much.
Well, maybe I'll do one more. Maybe I'll do the straight lines thing, and then I'll also I'll do one recitation.
Sounds good. And as Mike gets ready, I just want to thank you for listening to the Saturday Light Brigade. It's great to have you here. It's going to be spring before you know it. This is tomorrow's going to be a warmer day than today. You'll be able to hear a replay of this if you are disappointed that you missed some of the earlier songs by Mike. This will be on our neighborhoodvoices.org website shortly. We are going back to concertina, I believe.
Yeah. This is a medley of a couple of Irish fiddle tunes and preceded by a poem called Straight Lines, which is the title track of the newest CD. That was written by Pete Sutherland. Pete Sutherland is kind of a fiddler, guitarist, songwriter, band leader, and generally high mucky muck in the Vermont folk scene. And I don't remember the circumstances under which I had heard him do this poem, but when he did, I said, that's something I could have written. If I could have written it, if you know what I mean. It like speaks from my heart. And it's called Straight Lines. It goes like this. So I went to a funeral this morning. And I guess that I shed a few tears for a woman, a teacher who'd unwrapped a gift I'd kept hidden for years. Seems I've always loved words and music. Never gave it much thought, I confess, and 'twas she who'd unwrapped the gift of creation in this child, and others, I guess. Seems we should have held hands in a circle, danced and swayed like the wind in the pines. But those eulogies just drowned themselves senseless in that church where we sat in straight lines. Now me, I was raised up in New England. I'm as Yankee as pie and plaid shirt. My roots go way down where the bones of my fathers decay, become one with the dirt. We build fences of fieldstone and picket. We make arbors for grapevines to cling. We step forward and back in dances that mimic the gardens we plot every spring. With our telescope houses and long barns, with our steeples tall, white, and divine, from here to the hen house or heaven, we measure it all in straight lines. But the curve of the earth gently beckons where another geometry lies, where poetry, music, and art find expression in flashes and crashes and cries. And there are times when I've yearned to bend my hard edges and sing with those free-flying birds. But when I try, it all goes discordant and dark, and I can't make out tune or the words. So I shelter instead in the old rock and refuge of meter and measure and rhyme. For I come from a place where it's still no disgrace to lay out your thoughts in straight lines.
Mike Agronoff, that was beautiful. It's Sheila, right? And yes. Sheila's daughter,
Sarah,
is here. I almost thought Sarah was going to get up and dance. Sarah's here. How old are you, Sarah?
Nine.
Do you have any questions for Mike or anything? No, Sarah's a little shy. I'm glad you're here. It's fun to watch people watch you. I really want to encourage you to visit Mike's website. It's got a lovely little opening that you can walk through with him. It's just the right amount of
silliness. And you can skip it the next time.
You can skip it. It's mikeagranoff.com, AGRANOFF.com. And there you can find more information about him, some of his collaborative work, as well as the four CDs that are available, all of which are great.
My gig schedule.
And that's there, too.
And a blog.
Correct. And your blog's actually quite interesting.
Yeah, it's you know, every now and then I feel I have something to say, and I'll put it down and I'll say it. And I have, you know, maybe 150 subscribers to it, and it's well written. I'm a good writer in terms of prose and what have you. And it's got some interesting photos, travelogues, occasional political commentary, just all sorts of things that might be interesting to somebody other than me as well as me.
You mentioned it was New York Polytech, right?
Polytechnic Institute of Brooklyn, which is now New York Polytechnic Institute.
Yeah, I thought so. What's your degree in?
I'm a mechanical engineer. Okay. I was a machine designer.
And yeah. And you played music throughout most
I started. I started gigging out somewheres in the 70s. Remember my very first gig was at a local high school coffee house. And, I've managed to get myself on stage at the Philadelphia Folk Festival and Falcon Ridge and NERFA and Folk Alliance. And I've been proud to have played at the longest running live broadcast on the air folk concert series Bound for Glory in Ithaca, New York, and also in the longest continuous running folk concert series, Cafe Lena, which started in 65 and has been running continuously ever since.
Well, we've been here since 1978, so we're really glad to have you here as part of it. You mentioned something earlier. The person who wrote the first song that you sung.
Dave Gordon.
Dave Gordon. And how you could sort of hear the smile in his voice. And that's something that's true with you as well. You're a great curator of songs and a great player too. But you always manage to you just have such a distinctive you know it's you that's singing. And I mean that in a very kind way.
I certainly am not one of the great voices of the folk scene, but I think I'm one of the great presenters of songs.
Well, and actually, you do. I mean, you have a fine,
voice.
I think you have a good voice,
but you know, it's not. That's not why they'll come to hear me.
Yeah, but there's just something very comforting and pleasant, and even with the sad songs, you kind of feel like you're having a good time, even if they're sad. It's just fun to listen to you play. It's unusual, and I thank him for this. Often the idea is you have a musician on before their appearance in the city, and Mike was here last night. But we really wanted to take advantage of advantage.
No, that is an absolutely appropriate term.
We wanted to take advantage. I mean, you're already here, and people. I don't know if you know how much people in Pittsburgh love you. We've had so many requests.
How come they didn't show up at the concert last time?
It's a busy. Have you noticed that playing out? More of a difficulty in getting people to come out and sit still to listen to music.
Yeah, it's. I don't know how much of it is. I think in part as the new generation is less attuned to that sort of thing, and the old generation is getting sick and dying.
I think maybe some of that, but I also
and not staying out late.
Well,
and driving at night.
And there's so many different possibilities for what you're going to do. And if you include things like watching a movie on demand at home or watching something on, you know, your phone.
How can anybody sit and look at a phone for hours on end? I can't understand that.
Yeah. And, I think there is somewhat of a resurgence for people wanting, I think people are craving actually hearing live original.
I would hope so,
quirky,
but you know, it's not 100% borne out by the evidence.
Yeah, and you know what I just thought of that never occurred to me before: the idea of being able to get. It's hard enough to get like three or four people together on the same night at the same time. The idea of trying to draw, especially if it's kind of a unique genre, a quorum together might be getting harder and harder as people work multiple jobs. And
it's possible. I also, again, the whole concept of experiencing music being made live in person is being subsumed by other media.
Mm-hmm. The notion.
John Philip Sousa once opined that the advent of the gramophone would spell the death knell to making music in the home. And he was not altogether wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, when you can listen to Caruso and listen to big bands out of the hotels in New York, why would one want to go out to the local theater and hear the local band?
You know, the other thing that occurred to me, too, is so much music is studio created, right?
Yeah.
And that hurts, too. We have to get some more music.
Yeah, well, the recitation is going to be a relatively long piece. So
well,
I think I'd be able to
say. Well, let me thank you first. We'll have you recite us out, maybe.
Perhaps. We'll see what happens.
Here's Mike Agardoff once again. And I want to thank all of our guests today from Carson Middle School and also the Center for Young Musicians. Great to have them here today. And here, once again, Mike Agardoff.
This I wrote. It's a true fantasy based on an experience I had in my day job as an engineer. It's called The Ballad of Jake and 10-Ton Molly. They tell it still at truck stops along old I-95. And it's whispered on the CB all along the midnight drive. And some say it's just a story. But these eyes saw it done when Jake and 10-Ton Molly made their one last farewell run. Happened back in 72, as near as I recall. Watergate was in the news and Nixon about to fall. The last Apollo flight came home. The Vietnam War was lost. And the budget men set down to figure what it all had cost. They said, we've squandered megabucks. And if the truth be known, it's the cold gray morning after the greatest party ever thrown. It's time to roll back aerospace, cut down on defense spending. So the word went out. The squeeze was on. The boom years, they were ending. Now, Jake had worked at Avco since 1954. No paneled office had he there, no name upon the door. But with slide rule, square and drafting board, intuition, faith, and zeal, he could take a wild, half-baked idea, turn it into steel. But times had not been good of late. And rumors made the rounds about which contract would get cut, whose project would go down. There'd been no layoffs, at least not yet, knock on wood. But Avco's business was defense, and business wasn't good. Now, Jake left for work one morning, much like any in July. By habit, kissed someone, must have been his wife, goodbye. Wheeled his Datsun out the drive, New England Thruway bound, joined 90,000 other cars as up the ramp they wound. Six lanes run to Stratford, 40 miles from here. Toll booths every 15 miles. You never make fourth gear. Construction in the left lane, a truck stall in the right, and a Plymouth wagon on his bumper, close enough to bite. Now, Jake had a CB radio back when CB first began. We had but 19 channels then, a small but close-knit clan. And I spoke with him that morning. He was eastbound, me going west. And as his troubled voice went out of range, I wished him all the best. Jake arrived at work that morning 20 minutes late. His parking spot was taken. He walked four blocks to the gate. He missed the coffee wagon. He dropped his donut on the floor. Then from the office, his boss says, Jake, come in, close the door. "18 years at this old drafting board. Isn't that a laugh? But they say we've lost the contract. We got to cut back staff. A couple of weeks severance, some vacation pay past due. I'm 56 years old now. What am I supposed to do? Get a cardboard box from shipping, pack up tools and books, wander the halls aimlessly avoiding people's looks, make the rounds of friends and colleagues, shake hands as faces blur, and for last, let's go see Molly. And what's to come of her? Poor old 10-ton Molly, what will become of her? Out the door, across the street, out to the testing shed where Molly waited silently as if asleep or dead. Snapped the switch. Fluorescence bathed her in their cold blue light. Hiya, girl. How you doing? Boy, you're a pretty sight. 20 tons of armor plate. A diesel heart inside. Caterpillar treads, each one 40 inches wide. Dully gleaming olive drab and flanks on turret gun. 1,600 horsepower. My God, how she could run. I was there at your conception. I was midwife to your birth. My pencil gave was the implement that gave you life on earth. I know your insides inside out, each bolt and bearing cap, but they say now you're superfluous and he'll melt you into scrap. Yeah. Well, I'll climb inside you one last time, take the pilot seat, down the turret, dog the hatch, controls at hands and feet, go through the old routine once more. Hydraulic pressure go, fuel tanks full, electrics charged. All gauges read just so. And all of their own volition, his hands go through the routine. We know health from his brain, his eyes watch telltales turn to green, when suddenly a sound cuts through his dreaming like a knife, when with a whir from the hydraulics the big diesel springs to life. What the hell am I doing? Jake asked, knowing nervously. Molly didn't answer. She just purred contentedly. And then the weight slipped from his shoulders, and out his laughter rang, said, oh, well, if I'm going to go, I'm going with a bang. He eased the lever into low, throttle up a crack. Molly hunched and started out. Jakey settled back and grinning like a madman now without a fear or care. They blasted through the test cell wall as if it wasn't there. Chain-link fence loomed in their path, went down beneath the treads. A flashing glimpse of startled eyes and wildly turning heads out onto Main Street, Stratford. Laughing madly at the jest turned left onto the entrance ramp. New England Thruway, west. Jake cut in the supercharger and warning lights winked red. He swung into the passing lane and let her have her head. Oh, I really built you well, he croons. You've turned out quite a lady. And the traffic scattered left and right as the tank bore down at 80. And where's that goddamn Plymouth that tailgated me this morning? I'll ram my cannon up his tailpipe. Let that be fair warning. They came to the construction site. Squeeze right, the road sign said. And the road sign turned to Flinders as Jake forged straight ahead. Then over Molly's rattling, Rory heard the sirens wail. Connecticut State Trooper fast approaching on his tail. The cop pulled up. Jake looked across. Smiled, waved howdy-do. The trooper shrugged and fell behind. What was he to do? Jake reached to the radio, switched to the CB band. Breaker, breaker, Channel 9, this here's the Iron Man. I'm headed west on 95, headed straight on through. You truckers want a convoy up? I'll clear a path for you. Me and 10-ton Molly, we can clear a path for you. Now, I was in the Exxon station filling up with diesel, too. I'd left the CB on, and from the cab, Jake's voice came through. I flipped a 20 to the gas jock. That could fill my tanks back then. Swung my rig onto the cloverleaf and headed west again. Well, I timed it right. They overtook me a little ways. I never saw a convoy such as that in all my days. Cop cars mixed with semi-rigs of every size and rank. At the head of that parade, a goddamn freaking tank. So as Molly pulled abreast of me, I swung into her wake, and the convoy fairly shook the ground, a Richter 7 quake, sirens, air horns, treads and tires, diesel's throaty sound, juggernaut a mile a minute, New York City bound. But then Jake slowed the pace, for he could see from where he led that bane of every thruway driver. Toll booths dead ahead. He aimed for the exact change booth. Kablam! Three lanes were gone, tossed a quarter in the rubble, gunned his motor and drove on. For 50 glorious miles went the triumphant cavalcade, threw away to the cross west just to travel the parade. And then Jake took Merritt Parkway south. That road was banned to trucks, so we peeled off and the cops all followed, and we all wished him good luck. We followed him by CB, long as he remained in range, till one by one we lost his signal. Man. It seemed so strange to stand beside the interstate with 50 other drivers. Strangers till an hour ago. Now comrades and survivors. We heard it by the grapevine. They drove on till at last at Times Square and 42nd Street, they just ran out of gas. And the cops were very gentle as they led Jake off that day. And they busted up three wreckers getting Molly towed away. Jake stood his trial, did some time. But while he was in jail, he took computer programming courses in the mail, started writing video games, even sold a few. Have you played that one where you're in a tank and the screen shows you a view of highway, cop cars, trucks, and toll booths, and you have to get through? They play that game at truck stops along old I-95. They drop their quarters in the slot down the road they drive. Some say it's just a video game. But these eyes saw it done when Jake and 10-ton Molly made their one last farewell run.
Mike Agranoff, thank you for being here. Go to mikeagranoff.com for more information. And we will meet you right here next week on the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade from SLB Radio Productions.